Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gunslinger, Killer's Fuse by A.W. Hart. Narrated by Chris Abernathy. Chapter 1. A trail of ants wound a crooked line up the side of the rock to where the blood was cracked and drying in the midday sun. The old man lay beside the rock in the shadow of his horse, who stood faithfully by since the man fell off. He lay there waiting to die. Connor spotted the horse first, saddled and fully bridled. An odd sight here in the wilds, 2 days from the last town they'd been in. He rode in the middle with River Hicks ahead, as usual, and Connor's sister, Abby, in the rear. But none of them were ever very far from each other.
"You see that?" Connor said.
"I see it," Hicks answered.
"Kind of odd, a horse like that out here on its own."
"He ain't on his own."
Connor looked closer. He saw boots, then the crumpled figure of a man on the ground.
"Well, I'll be."
Abby said nothing. Up ahead, Hicks brushed his coat aside to clear room for the six-shooter on his hip. Hicks was a cautious man, verging on paranoid, but from what Connor had seen, Hicks had good reason to be on edge. Hicks held up a hand and slowed his horse. Connor and Abby followed suit. Connor turned in his saddle to check on his sister and saw that Abby quietly watched with interest, sitting forward in her saddle, ever refusing to ride side saddle like a lady. About 20 feet from the stranger's horse, Hicks reined his horse to a stop. He climbed down out of the saddle and never took his eyes off the man beside the rock. Connor got down as well and followed a few feet behind Hicks. The stranger's horse chuffed and shifted his position as the men came closer. The man on the ground barely moved. Hicks kept his right hand on the butt of his gun, but set his left hand on the horse's long snout and gave it a pat.
"Easy now."
The man on the ground was old, Connor saw. White-gray hair starting halfway back on his scalp, white whiskers on his chin which hung with jowls. The bald space on his head was half covered in blood. Connor noticed the large rock next to him also had blood on it, and watched the team of ants making quick work of the dried blood for their own nourishment.
"You okay, mister?" Hicks said.
The old man groaned.
"Someone do this to you?"
Hicks turned his gray eyes and scanned the hills around them, the small group of trees, waiting for an ambush. All was quiet but for the light breeze through the pine needles and the bird calls from high branches.
"Got thrown," the old man said.
His voice reminded Connor of the rusty hinge on the barn door back home. Hicks removed his hand from his gun and bent down to examine the old man. Connor peered over the rock as he moved closer as well. The man looked pale and half dead. The streak of blood ran down the rock and into the dirt below, where it collected in a small pool.
"How long you been out here?" Hicks asked.
"Few hours, I guess."
The old man coughed like dust was caught in his throat.
"I think I passed out a bit after the fall, though."
"Something spooked the horse? Rattlers or some kind of danger?"
"No, I'm just an old fool."
He coughed again.
"Been out 3 days riding. Another day and I'd have made Willamette. Got too dark."
He drifted off. Hicks turned to Connor.
"See if he's got a canteen."
Connor moved quickly around the side of the horse. She was tall and a dark reddish brown. Her eyes watched him closely, but with trust. He found a canteen hanging from the saddle horn and took it down. Nearly empty. He handed it off to Hicks.
"Here, drink some."
The old man struggled to lift his head high enough for Hicks to pour some liquid down his throat. Much of the water ran off down his cheeks and through the thicket of whiskers. After the old man had a swallow or two, he shook his head.
"Don't waste it. I'm done for." "Don't say that."
They were the first words Connor had spoken since they dismounted, and they came out before he knew it.
"Light's gone dim," the old man said. "Legs busted, too.
Both Connor and Hicks looked down at the old man's legs and saw for the first time that his right leg had an unnatural bend in it near the ankle. The leather of his boot jutted out at an angle. No doubt it was filled with blood.
"Don't blame Martha."
Hicks gave the man a quizzical look. "How's that?" The man tried to raise a finger to point, but barely got it off the dirt.
"My horse. It weren't her fault. Like I say, I'm a fool."
He descended into a coughing fit. The gash on his head began flowing with fresh blood. Connor untied the bandana from around his neck.
"Here, wrap his head with this."
Hicks didn't take it. He gave Connor a look and slowly shook his head.
"What? Why not?"
Hicks shifted his eyes down to the old man, who had shut his own eyes again. His mouth hung open, and his breath came uneven and shallow.
"Hicks, give it to him," Connor insisted.
Hicks walked away from the old man, took Connor by the elbow, and led him back to the horses.
"That old man is right. He's dying."
Connor looked back to the man, watching for signs that Hicks was wrong.
"I know it ain't pretty," Hicks said, "but that's the way it is."
"He said Willamette was only a day's ride. We could get a doctor there and bring him back."
"He ain't gonna make it 2 days. He'll be lucky to make it 2 more hours.
Hicks glanced back at the old man himself.
"Hell, that ain't lucky at all. Luck would be he doesn't make it 2 minutes.
"Well, we can't just leave him here."
Connor gave a quick look to Abby, hoping for her agreement. She just sat in the saddle and watched the men argue.
"You're right," Hicks said.
He turned to the man, scratched at his chin, pushed his hat back off his forehead, and said again,
"You're right."
With somber steps, Hicks marched back over to the old man, on as determined a mission as the ants bringing food back to the hill.
"What are you doing?"
Connor asked. He got his answer when Hicks drew his gun. Connor moved swiftly enough to spook Martha, who chuffed again and took a few hesitant steps side to side, but would not leave the old man.
"You can't,"
Connor said.
"Boy, it's the right thing to do."
"How can you say that?"
Hicks turned to the boy.
"Sometimes the right thing isn't the easy thing. If that horse there was down on the ground with a leg snapped in two, what do you think I should do?"
Connor swung his eyes side to side, searching for an answer, and found none.
"There are times like these, kid, when compassion and brutality meet. It's not all one way or the other. Some men need killing for being wicked. Some men need it to stop the hurting."
Hicks turned back to the old man, his jaw tight. Connor stepped forward, reaching out his left hand and almost laying it on Hicks's arm. He stopped an inch short, knowing if he grabbed Hicks's shooting hand, there could be consequences.
"I can ride ahead and fetch the doc. I can make it there in half the time. Or we can load him back up on this mare and bring him with us. She looks like a runner."
"Connor."
In one word, he said all he needed to. It was hopeless. Connor could see in the man's face he was nearer to the afterlife than this one. He had to be 50 years old, more probably. A good long life. The old man coughed. His eyes creased open one more time. His voice came out weak.
"You'd be doing me a kindness."
Hicks looked at Connor as if to say, "There, you satisfied?" Connor took a step closer.
"What's your name, old-timer?"
"No," Hicks said quickly and with authority. "The task is easier if this is only mercy. Don't need his life story."
Hicks drew back the hammer on his gun.
"Now get back there and make it so the girl doesn't see this."
Connor turned away and went back to Abby, who'd gotten down out of her saddle and had wandered closer, a look of curiosity on her face.
"Come on now," Connor said.
He put an arm around his sister and turned her to face a low hill and the trail they'd been riding. The ride hadn't been difficult, and the trail going forward didn't look bad. The old man had simply had an accident. A freak occurrence that could happen to anyone. If he'd fallen the other way, he'd not have hit the rock. If he'd fallen 5 feet further down the trail, he'd have been bruised, but otherwise fine.
But, Connor thought, maybe it was his time, no matter where he fell. If they hadn't happened along, he'd have been gone by sundown, most likely. In a way, it was luck they happened along when they did. Or else. Connor felt Abby jump in his arms when the shot went off. One bullet. The sound trailed off into the wind. For a minute, the bird songs stopped. The first chirp after the silence gave Connor the courage to turn around. He set his hands on Abby's shoulders.
Stay here.
I want to see, Abby said.
No, I want to.
She stood square to her brother, red hair blowing in wisps where it had come undone from her hair ribbon.
It's nothing for you to see. Why do you get to see? I'm not even going to look.
Connor held out placating hands, knowing an argument with his sister was a losing battle. Abby made a pout, but folded her arms across her chest and stayed put. Connor walked over to where Hicks was bent over the old man.
Get that bedroll down from there, Hicks said, pointing up to the back of the saddle on Martha.
He went back to turning out the old man's pockets.
What are you doing?
Just checking is all.
You can't do that.
He's not going to miss it.
It's morbid.
No, morbid is letting him bake in the sun with half his head gone. Now, get down that bedroll so I can cover him up.
Connor untied the bedroll and held it out to Hicks, who stood straight, jingling a fistful of coins.
That's food and lodging for tonight. And with what we can get for the horse, a few nights more. We're not robbing him. You think the ants are going to do something with these coins?
Connor felt tired of arguing, and he knew Hicks was right. The money would be wasted out here, or someone else would come along and go through the pockets of a dead man without doing him the favor of ending his misery.
Sort of payment for doing what needed doing, huh?
If you want to see it like that, then sure.
Hicks unfurled the bedroll and draped it over the man. Before it went over his head, Connor caught a glimpse of a split skull, dark red blood mixed with white bone and gray lumps. He turned away quickly, but it was too late. The image was in his head. As he looked behind him, he saw that Abby had crept closer. Surely she had seen too, but she was still staring, not looking away. Near his feet was the man's hat, undoubtedly fallen off during his tumble from Martha. Connor picked it up and slapped dust off against his leg.
Put it back, Hicks said with steel in his voice.
What? Why?
You don't take a man's hat.
Connor, frustrated, threw up his hands.
Well, why not? You can take his horse and his money.
The horse would die out here if we left her, and the money is just metal in a man's pockets. It's made to run through his fingers like water. It touches his fingertips for a moment, but so does his ass when he wipes after leaving a load. You wouldn't think that's what makes a man, would you? But his hat.
Hicks pointed to the hat in Connor's hand.
You wear that on your head every day. It fits to you and you alone. It bends with the trails you ride, the rain you soak in, the days you spend. Look at that ring around it.
Connor did.
That's this man's sweat, part of him. You could take it, but it will never fit you the way it fit him. Coins or a pocket watch or saddlebags are just things, but you don't take a man's hat or his boots.
I get the feeling you're making up these rules as you go along, Connor said,
but he dropped the hat back where he found it.
Son, the day you think you know more than me, you just speak up.
Hicks pocketed the coins and took Martha's reins. Even when the shot sounded, she never left his side.
Now, let's get moving. You heard the man. We still got a day's ride to Willamette.
Hicks tied Martha's reins to the back of his saddle and mounted up. He drew the last of his cheroots from his vest pocket and struck a match to it. Connor helped Abby into her saddle, mounted up himself, and followed Hicks down the trail. He turned over his shoulder and looked back to where the old man lay under his blanket. Abby smiled at her brother, unbothered by the encounter. One more night on the trail, and they'd finally be in a town again. Chapter 2. The ride through the panhandle of what was known as the Indian Territories had been rough.
not the terrain, but for the lack of it. Now, in the lowlands of southeast Colorado, the landscape looked like God's creation again, not God's dustbin.
I still don't see why we didn't keep some of the money, Abby said.
Not this again, Hicks groaned.
We took all the risk, she said.
Would you have left those people still wanting? You got to learn to take what you need and not be greedy about it. Greed is a sin, little girl.
So is taking the Lord's name in vain, and you sure as hell say goddamn a lot.
Hicks turned in his saddle to give the girl an incredulous look. Connor, stifling a laugh, said,
Abby, quit it now. All I'm saying is that the money we took from Tucker ought to be jingling in our pocket right now. Some of it, anyway.
First off, some of it is, Hicks said. Second, it wouldn't jingle because it was folding money. And third, I only kept a few dollars we'd need for food and such until we get to the county seat at Willamette. If I took more than that, those folks back there wouldn't have gotten what was owed them.
You are sure this senator is here? Connor asked,
still unsure exactly why they needed to see the man.
It's his hometown in the state he represents. He ought to be.
And why do we need to find him again?
Mind your own business.
It is my business, thought Connor. If he was going to ride halfway across Texas and leave the state for the first time in his life, he figured on knowing why he was going. But with River Hicks, he might not ever know. What Connor did know for sure was he was on the wrong side of the law now, on the wrong side of his own pa, and, much as he hated to admit it, a mite too young to strike out on his own with Abby. His sister seemed even more reluctant than him to leave Hicks's side. The gunfighter, they could hardly call him stranger anymore, offered comfort like a loaded pistol on your hip. With what Connor knew about farming, he could run his own, even at his tender age. He felt competent in that. Riding the open range, he was learning in the saddle. Time would come when River Hicks would either give up his secrets, or Connor and Abby would move on.
"Can we be sure there's no one on our trail?" Connor asked.
"No," Hicks said. "Not now, not ever."
Hicks reined his horse to a stop, turned the animal to face the two youngsters.
"Thing is," he said, "y'all are fugitives now, and the sooner you accept that, the better."
"We knew that as soon as we left Pa's farm," Connor said.
"This is different."
Hicks fixed him with a steady eye, squinted in the sun. His whiskers had grown long, but the scarred and battered face of River Hicks still cut through. It was a face that made you pay attention. A visage rutted and lined with hard-fought experience.
"A lawman behind you is different than your pa. Whoever Tucker might have set out after us is different still. We've put some miles behind us, but from now until you lay down in Boot Hill, none of us can stop looking over our shoulder."
He looked at Abby to see what effect his words were having.
"I don't mean to frighten you," he went on, "but this is the fact of it. No point trying to pretty it up. The things we did will follow us around now like the stink follows a horse wherever he goes."
"My horse doesn't stink,"
Abby said. She patted her mare's side and stroked her chestnut hair.
"She still needs a name, though. I've been thinking this whole ride, and inspiration still evades me."
"Girl, are you listening to me?"
Hicks asked.
"We're wanted. There's no other way to say it."
"I heard you," she said. "I only hope when they put me on the wanted poster they get the color of my hair right. And by the way, skunks are way more stinkier than horses."
Hicks shook his head and gave Connor an eye like he couldn't fathom that child. Connor shrugged back, quietly excited that Hicks brought him into the tiny shared moment. Hicks reined his horse back around and continued on down the trail. Abby trotted behind them, still stroking the neck of her horse.
"What about Beauty? No, that's too girly. Maybe Colt? Nah, that doesn't feel right either. It's okay, girl. We'll find you a name soon."
The town of Willamette sat in a shallow valley, green hills on either side, with larger rock-sided hills further out of town, rising up into what would eventually grow into the Rockies the more west you went. The town spread out from a wide main street in straight fingers of residential streets,
It looked to Connor to be a population well north of 1,000 people. Mining had built the town, but quickly dried up and moved higher up into the rocky peaks. Enough still came from the earth to keep the town buzzing and alive. They rode into town under a weathered and torn banner advertising Willamette as 25 years old and counting, though from the state of the sign, the town had to be at least 26 by now. A posted wooden sign gave the town's population as 403, the number newly painted over an older number closer to Connor's estimate. Below that was a plank of wood nailed on that read County Seat, and below that, on another board tilting at an angle, was painted, Home of Senator Lamar Perlmutter, Hometown Hero. Connor noted that as they rode by the sign, Hicks spit into the dirt in front of it. There were people out, but not too many. A church with a tall white spire pierced the sky above the other buildings. A hotel offering rooms for $1.50, a saloon with cracked glass doors, and a mercantile all sat at the center of town. Only a shop with a crooked sign selling mining supplies seemed to be shuttered.
"Might be a sign of my advancing age," Hicks said, "but my mouth starts to water more at that establishment than the saloon."
Connor followed his point to a barber shop. A man was reclined in the chair situated right in the front window, his face lathered and the barber working a razor on a strop by his hip. Connor looked behind him and watched Abby take in the storefronts. They'd gotten to town so infrequently under their father, who believed adamantly in self-sufficiency, that any time around this many shops and people plying their trade, both Connor and Abby gawked like they were at a circus. A man out front of the mercantile had been tipping back in a chair. He rocked forward, and the legs plunked down on the wooden boardwalk like a judge's gavel announcing the beginning of proceedings.
"It seems we have new souls in our midst," the shopkeeper said.
He stood and offered a wide smile to the trio. He wore a checked coat over a white shirt with matching checked pants. His hair seemed pasted to his head with lard. Hicks kept his horse in a slow lope forward, so Connor and Abby kept moving too. The shopkeeper was undeterred.
"My name's Henry Threadgill, owner of this here establishment, and somewhat of a town historian of sorts. I assume you saw the sign as you entered our fair hamlet. 25 years strong and then some, seeing as that storied anniversary was nearly a year ago hence."
When it seemed the man wasn't going to stop talking, Hicks pulled his horse to a stop. Connor and Abby followed suit. Henry took it as a sign of encouragement and increased his volume.
"Indeed, I welcome you, our new strangers, to Willamette in the great state of Colorado, the gateway to the mining riches of the West. A finer vision of God's country you shall not find. I notice no baggage with you, nor a woman in your party."
"The hell you think she is?" Hicks said, flicking a thumb back at Abby.
Henry adjusted the wireframe spectacles on his nose and looked twice.
"My apologies to the madam. Then it appears you travel without a wife, good sir. I only mention so because it is unusual, though not so unusual as I have myself lost my own wife. We are perhaps, sir, brothers in widowhood."
"I've never been married."
Henry waited a beat, but saw he would get no more explanation from Hicks.
"The young ones, then, have they perhaps lost their mother along the trail?"
"I don't see as that's your business."
"My apologies, sir. I merely inquire as a means to get to know our latest inhabitants. No town such as Willamette could ever be called less than neighborly."
"Well, neighbor, where might a man bed down for the night?"
"Why, at the Parisian Hotel. You'd not find finer accommodations even in the largest cities on the eastern seaboard. Though I must say the name is a bit of a high-minded aspiration. But even if you don't feel as though you are a guest of the European continent, you will find it much better than a dusty bedroll on a hard pack trail."
From across the street, someone shouted,
"Shut up, Henry! Leave the people be!"
Henry waved off the words.
"A newer transplant to our fair village. Pay him no mind. Came looking for mining work, only to find the mine camp moved some distance away."
"What did they mine for?" Connor asked.
"Ah, the lad's reticence finally succumbs to his curiosity."
Henry smiled wide and adjusted his spectacles again.
Why, my boy, they pulled so much gold out of that mountain.
Henry pointed north to an unimpressive mid-sized peak, despite his description as if it were a snow-capped spire of the Himalayas.
We nearly paved the streets with the stuff. But alas, so efficient was the mine under the direction of Mr. Willamette himself that all the ground had to offer was duly relocated to banks back east in a matter of years. But not one to fold his tent, the Willamette Mining Concern has diversified into silver, copper, anthracite, and a host of other minerals. These hills were placed here by the divine hand to share with the industriously minded man he so graciously created.
Another man across the street shouted, "Henry, for God's sake, will you shut your yap?" Hicks laughed at the funny little man and his flustered hand-wringing at the criticism of his fellow townspeople. Threadgill wiped at his forehead where his hair tonic left it shiny and slick. "One more thing there, Henry. Where might a man sell a horse?" Hicks gave a nod to Martha at the end of her rope.
"You'll find the livery at the end of Main Street and two blocks south. See Mr. Devereaux, and he will set you a decent price. And then, when your needs arise, my mercantile shall satisfy your every other wish as you settle you and these fine young ones within our quiet town."
"We aren't that young," Connor said.
Henry laughed.
"The boy is quiet until something piques his interest or raises his ire. And what of the little lady? Cat got your tongue?"
Abby stared at him for a few seconds, then said,
"You need to stop and wind that mouth of yours, or does it keep flapping all on its own?"
The men across the street burst out laughing. Henry sputtered and brushed a lock of greasy hair back across his head. Hicks, with a smile, tipped his hat.
"We thank you for your hospitality, Mr. Threadgill."
"Yes, of course," Henry said. "Come by the store. I can see you are a man who knows his finery, as your suit clothes are a cut above the average trail rider in these parts."
Hicks gave a backhanded wave as they rode on toward the livery. Before they turned off the main street, Hicks stopped his horse and dug a palmful of coins from his pocket. He handed them to Connor.
"You and Abby go get us two rooms at that hotel he talked about. I'll be along directly after I sell this horse and we'll get some supper."
"Two rooms?"
Connor asked. Hicks nodded to the coins.
"We can afford it."
He dropped his voice low so Abby couldn't hear.
"Besides, I may want to entertain a lady later on tonight."
Connor leaned back, a blush on his cheeks. Hicks clicked his tongue and heeled into his horse. He trotted on with Martha pulling up the rear. Connor turned his horse to face back down Main Street.
"Let's go," he said to Abby. "We really going to stay in a hotel?" Abby asked. "Sure are, and maybe we'll get you some new clothes. The man was right. You don't dress like a lady. That man was half blind and dumb to boot. I'm just saying, maybe you could put on a dress now and then. Maybe you could eat dirt and crap mud."
A favorite saying of their brother Thaddeus, and one Connor was dismayed to learn Abby had taken with them when they left. He stifled a laugh, not wanting to encourage her. He noticed two boys about their same age watching from in between two buildings. The boys studied the newcomers with curious interest, but Connor didn't want to advertise his business, that he and his sister had run away from home, that his home was no kind of place for even an animal, the way his father treated them, that the man Hicks wasn't his kin, and was in fact a deadly gunfighter and a wicked man, but that somehow Connor had taken to Hicks and had even learned a few things from him. Connor didn't feel like making friends with boys his age, nor did he feel like making up a lie to explain why they were here in town, so he urged Abby on to the hotel.
"I'll take two rooms," Connor said to the innkeeper.
The man, sporting a thin handlebar mustache, scanned the lobby over Connor's shoulder.
"You got your pa with you?"
"No, our pa ain't with us, but these are."
He set down four thick coins on the registration book in front of the man. He adjusted his vest, swiped at his mustache with a finger, and smiled rotten teeth at them.
"Two rooms it is, then."
The innkeeper set two keys down and turned the book to Connor, held out a quill pen. Connor hesitated, then took the quill, dipped it in ink, and signed the name Dan Dawson, his hero from the dime novel he'd read. Connor left one key at the desk.
This one is for Mr. Hicks. He'll be along directly.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?